Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome everybody to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. On this flight, we guarantee we will always have pretzels and coach. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 87 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 5, Episode 8 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. entitled The Last Day, which aired January 19th, 2018.
And this episode was written by the writing team of James and Sharla Oliver, who were the team behind Double Agent and Slingshot, and they really came into their own in this episode. And it was directed by Nina Lopez Corrado. And I don't know, I'm making a prediction. This episode might go a little bit longer than usual, Dave, because we've got a lot of stuff to parse out. And we're not used to doing time travel on this particular podcast, but we're getting right back into continuum mode here.
Yes, we are. I was going to say, well, we have time. But I mean, absolutely. I mean, we have some things to talk about before we get to that. But clearly, that's the main thrust of the podcast.
Right. And I'm sure our listeners are probably trying to figure it out themselves. There's been some discussion going on Facebook about maybe who might be Deke's parents, things like that. But before we get into the discussion here, I do want to talk about something that Dave discovered with some of the listeners on Facebook, and that is that the show schedule, the episode 100, was going to be on March 9th. I think you mentioned that last week, Dave, but we didn't do the math until we started to see how it lined up, because it looks like if they go week to week all the way up until episode 511, that's going to happen on February 9th. So if episode 512 is on March 9th, does that mean we have a month off?
It appears we do. Now, they still don't have episode 511 listed on the website, but as you said, I can't imagine it's not going to be February 9th. And it looks, by my calculation, if we go straight through, then they end on May 18th. And of course, if they wanted to end on May 11th with a double episode, they've certainly done that on more than one occasion.
Okay, so we'll be prepared for that. Yeah, they might skip a week between 510 and 511, but I just don't see why they would do that. So we might be coming up on a little mini hiatus and the switch of a storyline, perhaps, because they've used that to good effect. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to maybe seeing some wrap up to this storyline in the next couple episodes and moving on to something completely different, which I really can't even imagine what it might be. But the episode itself is going to have a lot to get into, so let's get right into it with our episode discussion.
All right, Mike. Well, look, as we said at the top of the show, time travel is the primary focus of the podcast. But, you know, we should touch on the Cassius aspect of the episode because it is important. And I think it's going to play a role. You almost figure it has to. I mean, why else have it there? But on one level, it's sort of become anticlimactic unless Sonar is going to kill one of the team. And I can't imagine any of the seven that would go down, which, of course, leaves Flint as the man that should be looking over his shoulder the most.
Yeah. I mean, it really, there's only two branches to the Cassius story. One is Cassius liquidating the lighthouse, it seems, or trying to anyway, and Sonara coming after our team on the surface. So it's almost like the remnants of his reign.
Yeah. And you know, you get a sense of the man and the fact that he now understands that there may be a means to survive on the surface, I mean, it strikes me as something that I would think he would have already tried to figure out whether or not that was possible before now.
Right. I mean, you do have to wonder how it's possible. I mean, we kind of take it for granted that once we see it, oh, yeah, that's possible. But there's gravity storms. There's no real food supply, water supply, so it is quite remarkable that they have. So you could kind of forgive Cassius for overlooking that.
Yeah, I guess so. And certainly sending now Sonara to the surface to reclaim the destroyer. And I really love that visual scene. She gets down there. She takes off her helmet, and it looks as if she turns her helmet so the helmet cam
yeah.
can function as a sort of video calling system. But he's calling for retribution instead of renewal. So obviously he's angry at being taken advantage of, basically at losing. And the fact that Mac, Yo-Yo, and Flint are still on board makes this aspect of the story still important.
Right. And it kind of makes sense, the story arc that he's going with here, because he did just kill his brother. So he's kind of got all his cards on the table now, and he might as well make the big play. And if that means recapturing Quake and heading off to the home planet or wherever his father is, then he has no reason to keep the lighthouse going.
Right. And, you know, the fact that the initial reaction is that the people are being punished because of Flint, they're not wrong about that. That doesn't mean that Cassius is right in blaming him, but it is a fact. But the other thing I find interesting, as Mac and Yo-Yo and Flint are trying to escape and leave as peaceful a situation for the people as they possibly can, you know, we see Yo-Yo trying to impart some inhuman knowledge that none of this is Flint's fault because this is all new to him. And should Flint survive, which I kind of doubt, as much as I love his character, you know, will she become a mentor of sorts to him? I think that would be really cool.
Right. Sort of the way that Jia Ying or Lincoln actually really became a mentor to Daisy, and then Daisy became a mentor for a lot of Inhumans, including Yo-Yo, and now she's passing the torch one more time.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we've been waiting for the chance to see how Mac reacts when he finds the weapons cache that Fitz left for him. Were you disappointed in his reaction?
No, I was right in line with some of the guesses that were made on social media, where I put out the question, what do you think Mac is going to say? And the answer for those keeping track was, hello, gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love Flint's line when he sees the shotgun axe.
Yeah.
Doesn't the axe get in the way?
Right. And that's on the Colsaz report tonight. So definitely a good one for Flint and Mac to have some interaction.
Right. Now, you know, Mac, and again, we've talked on numerous occasions, sometimes he acts without thought. Well, lately, it's like it's a new Mac. I mean, his plan is well thought out. It certainly is effective. Get all the Vrelnexians in one spot. I certainly didn't expect to happen what happened. And one of the coolest visuals, certainly of the episode, but you know, certainly one of the top few this season, when Yo-Yo goes in and gives us that slow motion where she's almost slowed down time. I mean, we really know that's not what she's doing, but.
And the disintegration discs are another callback. I love how they've been using a lot of callbacks to earlier seasons. And, you know, those are the same discs that took out Bakshi. So, you know, those are some really cool weapons that Fitz was able to squirrel away, and they were immediately useful, along with the little portable power source that allowed them to distribute the gas that the Kree had to manage the Vrelnexians.
Right. And then that final thought that if the humans are going to survive, you can't fight each other. And it seems so simplistic, and we understand that the way Cassius has been running things, they really have no choice. You either do what he asks you to do. And
this is generations now that have been ingrained into how they act. That's why they reacted that way about Flint initially. You know, it's easy for Mac to say, no, don't go down that road. Well, they've gone down that road several times probably in their lifetime. And it's only because things are so dire and probably they can tell that this is the point of no return that they're able to make that switch. So,
all right, well, let's get into the main portion of the episode. And certainly I think one of the things that you and I have learned over the years doing a Continuum podcast and then you do the 12 Monkeys podcast with Corey is that time travel can really be a difficult thing to get a grasp on because so much of it depends on how it's presented by the writers. And if we've learned anything is that when you read reviews of these different episodes, when you read Reddit sites, forums, everybody thinks they know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you get down to it, we can only really go by what we have in this episode. So for instance, I think what we have here is a time loop.
Yeah.
And we're basing that on something that first watch, it's easy to miss.
And I did miss it. I did miss it.
When Fitz mentions that, you know, we've done this before.
Yeah, I completely didn't see that the first time I watched the episode, or I didn't understand what I was hearing. So if I hadn't watched this a second time, I don't know that I would have gotten it. It went by so quickly, and a lot of people could be wondering whether or not we're just seeing a flashback to what would have happened had they not been extracted and sent to the future. But if it's a loop, then we might actually be in some pieces, including that conversation that Fitz had with May, where we're seeing what happens after they get back from the future. So that could be very confusing. Definitely.
Well, sure. And, you know, we've mentioned the idea of the bootstrap paradox where, you know, your future self goes, you know, back to the past with knowledge of, you know, something or
piece
of technology.
I guess in this case, they have knowledge of the time machine such that they can maybe improve upon it when they get back to the past again.
Yeah. But we've talked about the fact that we're in 2091. We know that that's been established within the show. We know they left in 2017. But one of the things that comes up is whether or not they're reliving the same events over and over again with different outcomes, which, again, I always defer to you because you just have a better grasp on time travel in general than I do. So it would not be a fixed loop then if the results are different each time, correct?
Right. But somehow they've got to get knowledge back to the past to make things different on the second round. So they need to know what their previous selves did. And I'm not sure how that information is being communicated because Fitz clearly says that we could have done this 1,000 times. We wouldn't even know it because the only memories they carry with them are from the current time loop. So they can go back into the past and work with what they learned at the lighthouse, but that's it. So they don't know what's been attempted. I think it's very interesting that they have tried different things without any results because the only thing that I can conclude is that it must have failed at least once, and only Fitz is concluding that they are on multiple loops that have failed each time. But I don't think he could know or anyone could know how many times this loop has been repeated.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned to me earlier in the day that episode in Travelers, and you guys, if you haven't watched Travelers and you're into time travel, please do yourself a favor and check it out. But, you know, where we do see that loop, they keep learning something each time, a mistake, if you will, and then eventually are successful.
Yeah, and I think what you're dealing with in that Travelers episode and in this episode is that the odds are so heavily stacked against them that it takes several loops to get it right. So whatever it is that causes Daisy to still do what she does, although you know what, Dave, I'm not convinced that the closed circuit camera footage is proof of anything. He says that she walked into an empty city that had been evacuated and there was a 12-point something earthquake on the Richter scale, and that's what cracked the earth open. That's not enough for me. I don't know if that's true for anyone else in the audience.
Oh, I don't see how it can be enough. I mean, because, well, number one, it's so easy to manipulate digital footage, as I think, well, I know you know, and I think certainly the bulk of our listeners know as well. So, yeah, it's not enough for me. And again, we go back to what Daisy has said on numerous occasions. I don't have that kind of power.
Right. And we've spotted the gravitonium. How could that not come into play? So I think they're working with incomplete knowledge. What bothers me about that theory, though, is that Fitz is so adamant with May that Daisy, even after she saw the aftermath of what happened by going to the future, I'm assuming he's referring to, she still came back and destroyed the Earth. So that one statement of Fitz's is what tells us we're on a loop and that they do make it back to the past and the same thing happens regardless of what they learned in the future.
Okay. Now, I mean, one of the things I guess we have to think about, although I don't think we're dealing with a multiverse here.
No, definitely not. Just a time loop, although that's tough enough.
So is there one timeline in which the Earth always explodes? I mean, you know, does Daisy always go back and the Earth always explodes, whether or not she's responsible for it?
I guess each time they change things, the one true timeline is erased and replaced with whatever they do that time. So I don't know that there is one timeline that remains with the Earth destroyed, because I do think we're dealing with erasing whatever whatever results come from what they learn in the future. But I don't know, because we had that whole theory running for a long time about the message coming from 616, and I think that must have been a red herring this whole time. No multiverse here.
Okay. Now, you know, we get some dates that help us gain some perspective, certainly in terms of a timeline. And we find out that in 2018, three more cities went dark. And we know that Simmons is with Robin at this point, going to the lighthouse. They were in Zephyr at that point. Am I correct?
That is correct. And okay. It's a very interesting combination that it's Simmons and May, because there's no Coulson. Not a single one of those flashbacks has Coulson in it. And we do see Fitz, but and Yo-Yo, of course, but we don't see everyone. And of course, we don't see Daisy, because we saw that she stormed off at some point. But yeah, 2018 is when it all went down. And there is a pun intended in there, because of course the Zephyr does crash before it gets to the lighthouse.
Right. So then I think our next milestone is 2022. And that's when we find out that Simmons and Fitz realize that they have to work on some sort of a time machine design. And even if they don't live to see it actually work, it is up to them to do it, trusting that someone will continue their work.
And putting that together with what we learn from Coulson and his team in the future, apparently Deke's father, Owen, did complete it at some point using schematics that no doubt came from Fitz and Simmons.
Right. Now, obviously, one of the things we have to try to figure out, and we certainly can only guess at it, who are Deke and Owen really in terms of people we already know? Because obviously the speculation out there is that, oh, Deke is Fitz and Simmons' son.
Or his grandson, maybe.
Well, right. And because I think if you look at the actual age, it would have to be grandson, which would then mean his father is not necessarily their child, but could be married to their daughter.
Oh, okay. Because we do have mention of Deke's mother and how she died, and he kind of blames his father, Owen. Yeah, Owen and Deke do have the last name Shaw, so that might lend credence to that idea. But we also hear mention, I think Yo-Yo says something to May about changing her name or something like that. So they could have had some name changes going on in the crisis. But yeah, speculation is running rampant here.
Right. And that's all it is at this point. And it's certainly fun to do. We don't really get any evidence in this episode one way or the other on that.
Exactly.
Right. Now, moving ahead to 2025, we're at the lighthouse, and I think one of the things that really strikes you in this episode is seeing this softer side of Melinda May. And it's not that we've never seen a softer side of her before, but the relationship she ends up having with Robin calls her mom.
Yeah. I mean, someone had to adopt her after her mother didn't make it to the lighthouse, and May is maybe not the obvious choice. But there's a combination of things in my mind going on here. One is that she has in her mind something to prove, something to make up for with regard to the cavalry incident where she was responsible for the death of a child. And on top of that, if they have come back in a loop, she has had the conversation with old Robin that says she'll be there for her. And so that would maybe motivate her to come back and do exactly that.
Right. And I mean, one of the things about the episode that does confuse people, and I think the line that most of us use is, oh, man, that makes my head ache.
Yeah.
but the fact that 2091 May doesn't know that she raised Robin.
This 2091 May.
Right. This 2091.
Well, no, I guess that's true, because any 2091 May is going to have been extracted from the diner. Now, if they've done this loop multiple times, I don't know. Are they still using the diner every single time? I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes my brain hurt, certainly.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that comes out in this aspect of the timeline in 2025 is that Mac is apparently dead or missing
Yeah.
in this timeline.
I'm guessing dead.
Okay. And I'm guessing dead as well, but I don't think they use the word dead.
No, just gone.
Just gone. So we can't imagine Mac abandoning the team, which then takes us to the next step that he must be dead. But it's here that Robin first mentions Flint, whose name, of course, means nothing to anyone.
Exactly. And it's one of those things that you wonder how much May is taking on faith based on future knowledge, if this is the looped version of May, and why everyone else isn't having that level of faith, or at least giving her the benefit of the doubt, because there is quite a bit of animosity towards Robin. I mean, I know Fitz is somewhat motivated by hearing Robin mention and repeat the details of Simmons's death, which obviously would put anyone off. And of course, Simmons was there initially. And so how she died, who knows, or whether or not she's talking about some kind of future death for Simmons. But it seems like when Fitz says that, Simmons is already gone. So lots of death going on here.
Yeah. And again, that's part of the problem that everybody has being around Robin.
Right.
And it's understandable.
Yeah.
But because we so often see her as a child, it's just heartbreaking because again, it's certainly not something she asked for. But what's also interesting in this aspect of the timeline is that she tells us she hasn't yet seen the vision of how S.H.I.E.L.D. saves the world.
Right. And that actually made me pause for a minute because I wondered if May was just telling her that to give her hope that she would end up saving the world, or that she would pass that message to them to keep the hope alive. But then older version of Robin does say that you were right. I did end up having that vision after all. I just haven't lived it yet. So I'm wondering if that vision refers to a culmination of the timelines, the loops that finally leads to a solution where Robin gets to live.
Okay. Now, you know, I know we talked about Cassius already, but one of the things that still nags at me, what he plans to do with Quake, should he capture her? I mean, is she merely a trophy, something to show his father?
Oh, yeah. I think that's definitely it. If he doesn't have Quake with him, he doesn't have a leg to stand on with regard to some sort of redemption. And he has her as a big ticket item. I don't know if it's money he's after or fame, except for the fact that they think her power is so great that she was able to crack a planet. And perhaps that's something that could be useful to them, sort of like the Death Star is for the Empire in Star Wars.
Okay. Now, you know, Voss is somebody that I mentioned at the top of the show. I can't really get a handle on him because on the one hand, he truly seems to be trying to prevent the catastrophe by preventing S.H.I.E.L.D. from going back. And I'm thinking like, okay, why? Because he blames Daisy for destroying the Earth. So then what difference does it make letting her have another shot at it and maybe getting a different result?
Yeah, that's where I'm wondering if Voss has some information about loops, because he seems to indicate that this is something we have to try because we've sent Daisy back before and she keeps doing it even after learning what she learns in the future, according to Fitz. And because Fitz says Voss tried it too, and that really scrambled my brains when he said, mentioned Voss's name in the past. But apparently he knows that Voss was going to do what he did to try and head off Quake at the pass. If she doesn't go back, she can't destroy the world on the next loop. So I think that's where he's coming from. My question is, why did he wait so long? It seems like the turning point for him and his team was when Coulson found the piece of the monolith and started concentrating on getting back to the past rather than on kicking Cassius out and taking over the lighthouse again, which seems to be what Voss wants.
Okay. Of course, isn't there the theory that if the Earth is meant to be destroyed, it's going to get destroyed whether or not Quake's there or not? But
right, especially if our theory holds true and it's not Quake that did it after all, they're going to have to figure out a solution to whatever it is that did cause it. And if it's gravitonium, how did that happen? What disaster occurred? And why was there any left to power the lighthouse?
Now, we're reunited with a piece of the monolith, and it's almost as if Voss has it in his little cabinet as an afterthought, which I kind of find hard to believe. He seems like he's more on top of things than that. So is it one of these, like, Edgar Allan Poe's The Purloined Letter. If you don't want somebody to find something, just leave it out in plain sight.
Yeah, that was a little odd. If you know you don't want them to getting distracted with trying to get back, then you probably should have hid that a little better. And plus, why does he have it in the first place? I can't figure out what's up with Deke's dad, because he did send that message. Deke heard it. And Voss makes up a story about sending him off to a transmission tower somewhere and that he'll be back soon. So what happened to him? Did he get eaten by the Vrelnexians, or was there some kind of sabotage? And how did he get the fragment as a result of whatever happened to Deke's dad? Because according to Deke, his mother held that very dear and his father trusted no one with it, not even Deke himself.
Well, so you think his dad's dead?
I don't know. That's the thing, because Deke gets knocked out once he realizes that Voss has that fragment and there's no way his dad would give it up willingly.
Right.
So what is the alternative? He's got him captured or tied up somewhere?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Voss, I think it's Voss. It says he's been sending messages, you know, up until the last few days. So I guess I'm operating under the assumption that he's on the surface somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got his own little, you know, place that enables him to survive the Vrelnexians that are on the surface. But I guess I'm operating under the assumption that he's still alive and we are going to meet him. But all of that said, we know the other pieces must be out there. Obviously, why bring up, you know, this one piece? And then, of course, we have the scene where Deke sees it and he says, oh, it goes right here.
Well, Fitz, I think, is the one that notices it fits into the time machine, yeah.
Oh, was it? Okay.
But it was like a key, and I think Deke just kind of dismissed it out of hand because he thought his parents were a little bit kooky anyway, and that there wasn't anything to it. He had even met Robin and just dismissed her as an old lady who was a little bit crazy. So it definitely was something that Fitz and Simmons had been studying closely enough that they could put two and two together.
Okay. Now, there is that one line of Robin's, and obviously, a lot of the things Robin says really cause you to pause and try to figure out what they mean. But she says, Philip J. Coulson, he can bring all the pieces together.
Right. And the first time I heard that, I'm thinking, does she mean pieces of the earth? But then on the rewatch, I thought, maybe she means pieces of the monolith.
Okay. And then what's Flint's role in all of this?
Right.
Is it that he can reassemble them? I mean, which obviously he likely can. Whether or not he has the ability to find these, we haven't seen any evidence of that.
Right. So Flint could be involved in a number of different ways. Obviously, with the closing scene and May saying, who's Flint? We know that Robin did mention his name as a key to their solution moving forward. But whether it's bringing the Earth back together, bringing the monolith back together, or perhaps going to the past and preventing the Earth from cracking in the first place, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, I mean, Robin tells May in that scene where we see her whispering, you know, her dying breath, mm-hmm. that they need Flint to save the world. Now, what they need him for, we don't know. So at this point, it's speculation. But the other thing that I noticed only on the rewatch is that as all the team members are talking about all this stuff, we see Enoch in the background and he's drawing or writing.
Yeah.
But he looks like he's doing something very purposeful. So
observing.
Yeah, well, but what's he writing, I guess?
I don't know. What do Chronicoms do in their observing duties? Who knows?
Yes. Now, that line, again, that Coulson will bring it all together. And I think that the obvious answer is bringing together the pieces of the monolith. But is it something that's maybe not that narrow, that just he's the one, because he is the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D., that he's the one that's going to bring all of this together, including the pieces of the Earth?
Yeah, I wonder, because there's a lot of people who are deemed important, including May. She says, you know, you're going to be very important in the decisions that are being put before the team. So a lot of people are being prophesied as very key. I think she even mentioned Coulson and May. And Simmons, was it? What was the third name last week where she just mentioned three names and not the rest of them?
Oh, right, right.
So there's going to be a lot of different possibilities put before us. Right.
Now, the other thing, and I forgot about this, I should have mentioned it earlier, with Daisy, what are they going to do about the inhibitor?
Yeah, we were questioning that last week. Would it be as easy to take out as Simmons' deafness bug that she had in her ear? But yeah, I don't know that they have a real good solution for it. Maybe it's just taking the Quake powers off the table. But if that's so, then how can she go back into the past and use those Quake powers? Isn't that good enough for Voss? It doesn't work.
Well, yeah. Now, I mean, they could obviously go back to the lighthouse and assume that Cassius has something there that will allow it to be extracted, or wait till they go back to 2018. And then, as Simmons says, we'll have the technology, I'll have the instruments, we'll have the experts.
You know, what would be interesting is if Mac and Yo-Yo come back with Flint and, you know, they were using the little extractor for the things in the people's arms. Maybe they'll find something that can extract Daisy's device as well. And then they stop for a minute and think, wait, should we do this? Maybe we should wait a while, keep Daisy inhibited for a little bit, because if what happens is supposed to happen, maybe we should leave that power turned off for the time being. That might cause a little conflict as well. But yeah, what's going to happen with her powers? When are they going to be returned to her?
Yeah. And I mean, we've certainly seen that Daisy can take care of herself just based on her learned fighting skills. So it's not as if she's helpless. But on the one hand, that makes for an interesting narrative device at this point.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what they do with it. And there's so much that's unpredictable at this point. I mean, that's the least of our worries, what Daisy is going to do about her inhibitor. So we've got bigger fish to fry with the time loops.
Right. And then we get to the end, and again, another heartbreaking scene when Voss plunges a knife into older Robin's chest because he's afraid she will reveal how they can go back. And I get it. I understand where he's coming from. I mean, it doesn't make what he did right, but I understand it.
Right. I just wish I knew how he was motivated. Is it from knowledge of previous loops? Because otherwise, why take such a desperate act?
Right. And, you know, and then we get that scene where she says, you always said you'd be there at the end, to May, who she calls Mom. And then, of course, we get that quick flashback. And, you know, we learn that May, in fact, raised her in, you know, in that other timeline.
I won't lie. That scene had my eyes leaking a little bit. That was really touching.
Right. And, you know, given everything we have in this episode, the epilogue, I don't want to say it was a letdown, but it was a little bit of
a letdown.
Well,
how could it not be after that May scene?
Right. And, you know, he tells Sonara, if you find any human survivors, kill them and bring back Quake. And okay, we get it.
It's just kind of a setup, right?
Yeah.
For the next episode so that we know that they're still on the table. Yeah, boy. And I can't wait to see what Sonara does, because she's been such a great character, and I can't imagine anything else happening but her meeting her end somehow in some kind of epic battle. So I kind of hope that for that character. I mean, I know she's probably not going to survive whatever comes, but I hope she goes down fighting.
I do too.
Well, that was a great episode to discuss, and I hope you guys learned a little bit with us. I certainly learned some things in discussing it with Dave, so that's what the podcast is for, really. And we can't wait to see where it goes next. But there was quite a bit of sass, especially from Coulson this week, and so Faith had a lot of stuff to put in her Coulson's report. Unfortunately, she lost her voice. I guess you noticed, Dave, that she didn't have much of a voice last week, and she was apologizing for that. I didn't actually see much wrong with her voice last week, but apparently it got worse and she has no voice at all this week. So she did send me the clips that she wants to put on the Coulson's report, though. So let's go ahead and go right into what she has for us. But first, before we get into this week's choices, here's the winner from last week, Not Enough Credit.
Level 3?
You mean that level infested with aliens that suck your blood?
Why was I... I feel like I'm not getting enough credit here. I have traveled through time and space to find you. I think we're moving past that bit a little bit too quickly.
And as Faith would say, now for this week's contenders. Number one, can't recommend the airline.
Looks like you had a rough landing.
Yeah, can't recommend the airline. Inexperienced pilots, a lot of turbulence. Ran out of pretzels and coach.
Number two, you look pretty spry.
Sure. But Daisy's still powerless. And I'm not winning any fights with this hole in my leg.
I don't know, you look pretty spry for someone who was born over 100 years ago.
Number 3, Hello, Gorgeous.
Hello, Gorgeous.
I don't get it. Doesn't the axe make it harder to shoot?
It makes it easier to chop heads off.
Number 4, Post-Apocalyptic Eagle Scout.
You're like a post-apocalyptic Eagle Scout.
Not sure what that means, but I like it.
This must have taken you years to salvage.
And number 5, Pebbles.
Whoa.
Dial it back a notch, Pebbles.
And I'm going to take a page from Faith's ending here. Did we miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. Please be sure to tweet your favorites for next week's episode to FBMC with the hashtag ColeSass. And thanks to Taltos and Ken from Chicago for always tweeting your ColeSass choices every week. To vote for this week's contenders, go ahead and visit facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. And I might as well take this opportunity to thank Faith for being such a huge, huge part. This ColeSass report has become an anchor almost for our podcast. And it's just great that she's able to do this for us every week. And I was pretty impressed that she even did this aspect of it for us and then allowed me to kind of fill in for her. So thank you, as always, Faith, for your service to the podcast. But let's go ahead and get into our feedback this week. We've got quite a bit of it from some new folks and some from people we haven't heard from a while. And one of those, in fact, is Jess in Atlanta, who is catching up. She's able to catch up a little bit more easily this season, and we haven't heard from her for a number of seasons now. She says, "Hey guys, I'm pretty sure I missed the deadline, so I thought I'd just send a quick email," and this is from last week, of course. "I'm really enjoying this season of S.H.I.E.L.D. I am really curious how they are going to manage to get our team back to the present, especially since Fitz took the long way to rescue the team. I'm assuming Enoch and Robin have a huge role to play there. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of Robin's powers. Now we know she's alive and actually speaking to people, it will be great to finally hear her story." And of course, Jess, you probably noticed you got your wish there. "Anyway, still listening each week, even though I can rarely call in. Shifting to Friday nights has actually been good for me. It's easier to watch more timely each week. What is your feedback deadline this season?" she asks, and I'll go ahead and answer that. That is 6 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday after the episode airs is our feedback deadline. So thanks, Jess, for getting that into us.
Yeah, I think for me, and I think you as well, we don't watch it Friday nights. It's great to watch with my tea on Saturday morning.
Me too. Coffee for me, though.
So, all right. Well, we also heard from Noema, who says, "What an episode. By now, I'm sure many people have their own personal favorite mind-bending timeline hypothesis. I have one of my own as well. But looking forward, I have a few predictions about how exactly the Kree return to Earth. Sonara."
Ooh.
"Through one way or another, Sonara eventually learned that in order for her and Cassius' reign over the lighthouse to come to fruition, she'll need to secretly hitch a ride back in time.
Ooh, that's interesting.
While on Earth, I suspect she'll befriend General Hale and manipulate her in such a way that ensures the destruction of Earth."
Oh, we forget about General Hale. She's still back there killing her minions.
"By doing so, Hale will make contact with the Kree to help preserve humanity, striking a deal, perhaps even inadvertently influence the order that sends Cassius on his suicide mission. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on this week's episode. P.S., I'm not sure how it will tie into the timeline, but I noticed Robin had a few drawings of a beach. It looks like a magical place."
Maybe that's all it is. Who knows with Robin's stuff? It's interesting that her powers came to be at a time when all she really could concentrate on prophecy-wise was this storyline for the Earth. And of course, it's a very prophetic and apocalyptic one. So it's kind of consumed her whole life. All right. Well, thank you, Noema. And we'll move on to Taltos' email here. She says, "There was no Coulson in those flash forwards, so that future is automatically less sassy and certainly not one we want happening. I wonder if Coulson went after Daisy when she left the Quinjet, or perhaps she was off trying to save Polly. Speaking of which, there are several problems with Voss's story. The video made it look like Daisy was signaling to the Quinjet to leave and get to safety. I thought I saw some muzzle flashes. Was she firing into the ship?"
I'm not sure. I couldn't really tell.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks surrounding that footage. not exactly the actions of someone planning to wantonly destroy the Earth. He also said Daisy headed into the city after it had been evacuated. Why was it evacuated before Daisy supposedly caused the earthquake? How would evacuation help if she was planning to crack the world like an egg? And wouldn't whomever was in the Quinjet know for sure what Daisy was planning to do? If they actually thought Daisy would destroy the world, why would they just let her go instead of icing her and sticking her in a containment cube? Following that logic, if 2022 Fitz still thought Daisy destroyed the world, none of the surviving team members could have been on that Quinjet. So many things not adding up in this end-of-the-world story. Yeah, those are some good ones that we didn't bring up there, Dave, so I'm glad Taltos, as always, is there to point them out. I guess the team is now going to need Flint to gather up the pieces of the monolith so they can go back. I wonder what kind of time travel rules Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is dealing with. If Flint goes back to save the Earth from breaking apart, would he be stuck there? Or would he just disappear due to the timeline change? Oh, that's a good point. Would he have erased his own origin if he does end up helping them? But I think you and I, Dave, are of the mind that whatever he does to help the team might end up causing his demise, right?
Right. And
unfortunately.
And Taltos, time travel rules? Come on. This isn't Continuum.
Yeah, no, Taltos is right there.
No,
she's right there with the best of them for time travel.
Absolutely. And look, if you're going to use time travel, you have to take that into consideration, because if your audience is sticking with you through time travel stories, you know they're serious. So
that's right.
So
good point.
While they haven't really established any rules yet, at some point they're going to have to.
Exactly. And they only have to establish rules for as long as the storyline lasts.
Right.
So it's not like 12 Monkeys or Continuum where the whole show is based on it. So, but good point. I hope they didn't lose any people who are not fans of time travel because of this plot line, because I think this has been one of the best storylines we've seen. And that's in a very strong field, especially with season 4 that we just finished. So it's been some really great stories here.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes with people I talk to that I know watch the show, and I haven't talked to them about this episode yet, but very often their reaction to these kinds of stories is like, wow, that's really cool. I don't know what the heck's going on, but I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
So hopefully that's what happens here. So, all right. Well, Faith couldn't talk, but she could write. And she says, I do love when a storyline can really play with time. I'm not sure about anyone else, but this episode reminded me of Slaughterhouse-Five. Robin is definitely Billy Pilgrim.
Oh, good.
Right. And if you don't know Slaughterhouse-Five, Billy Pilgrim becomes unstuck in time, and he has no control over when or where he'll end up.
And so, yeah, Robin has no control over what she sees or when she reacts to what she sees.
Right. This episode answered some questions, but it brought up so many more. What killed Gemma, Mac, and Coulson? Coulson? Do we know Coulson?
Well, it's just because Coulson wasn't there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Was May the only one to survive with Robin? How far into the future is that flashback, even though it's actually in the past chronologically?
Yeah, that one didn't have a timestamp, but that's a very good question, Faith.
I can't tell if Robin is the same age as when Fitz left her, or if she's a little older when the Zephyr is trying to get to the lighthouse.
Hmm.
Also, what? Our team was at the lighthouse? Or will be? No wonder the Kree wanted to get rid of all those that believed in the prophecy. Those people actually knew the people who were going to save the world in the future. Also, I think we know Deke's father. I wanted it to be Hunter, but A, Hunter couldn't build that machine, even with Fitz's schematics, and B, he would be very old when Deke was born.
Yeah.
I don't know who it is, but I just feel like his identity is being kept from us for a huge reveal in episode 12, maybe. I'm loving this season so much.
Yeah, and I think there's been some speculation with Faith, so since she wrote that message, I think maybe some theories have been hatched, but thank you for those theories, Faith. Next, we heard from Agent Coco. This is a new one for me. I don't remember hearing from this person before, and they have a lot to say. Fitz and Simmons sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. We didn't mention that scene, Dave, but yeah, that was great. I love that they got some time alone for smooches and maybe more. They deserved that moment. And did you like, Dave, how she... When the door was locked, Fitz gave her kind of a little smile, like, did you lock the door, Gemma? Like, for another round?
Yeah.
That was good. Mama May had me in tears, bawling like a baby. She is more than a warrior. She is a loving, stable presence. I want to be her when I grow up. I am so proud of Daisy. The way she talked about her situation with her dad felt like she has healed from all the trauma that came with that experience. What a strong, mature girl. She described her situation with her sociopathic wannabe Hulk father and her succubus murdering mother as a rocky start. Understatement or perspective? I keep thinking Daisy is going to die in this pod. Ugh, say it ain't so. My sweetheart Yo-Yo really shined. The way she ended those roaches was everything. I love when she just stands back and gives that sweet smile at the end. She is hot and has been my crush since day one. I love that she was centered a bit in this episode. Of course, her plan of action is to remove those damned gadgets. She is all about being free, and I love it. Mac is the king of nicknames, so now Flint is Pebbles. Cute and reminding us that Flint is brave and amazing, but also a teenage boy. I knew that guy Voss was a creep. He came off creepy immediately because it looked like he made Robin nervous, but I could not figure out why. He also reminded me of Grill, R.I.P., I guess. As a black mom, the visual of the POC folks protecting that black boy against everyone else made my heart swell. Although it may not have been that deep for those behind the scenes, it's nice to see. I was a little annoyed that Mac and Yo-Yo stayed behind last episode, but now I get it. Yeah, that was nice to have an explanation for why they stayed behind. Great storyline that they ended up having. He would have been all alone in that moment, which is unfair for a kid. Outside of them lynching Tess this season has been incredible. I'm still mad at them for that. That is my only complaint. I would have preferred to see her survive all of this. A scene with her and the elder Robin would have been beautiful. I really felt like elder Robin was a little girl. Great acting. So fragile. Also a little bit bothered by the way the whole team outside of May treated Robin in the possible future scenes. But I guess they had all lost patience with her babbling. Still, I can't imagine them being so abrasive towards a child. We all kind of guessed that Flint would be part of saving the day, but it's still exciting to see how. I am looking forward to seeing how they pull this off. I could say more, but I will stop there. I love this show. And thank you so much, Agent Coco, for chiming in on this. I really like how you expressed your thoughts in this feedback email, and it's always great to hear from someone new.
Yeah, and let me just jump back on a couple of points she made. And I hope I'm wrong, as I said before, about Flint, because I really love his character. He's just great, but I just have this feeling.
Yeah.
But, you know, she says that maybe they'd lost patience, and the stress they're under about trying to save the world, you kind of get it.
Yeah.
She mentions losing Tess. And again, another great character, but I really feel a show... there have to be some stakes for the characters. And we understand that Coulson's safe, May is safe, right? I mean, all the principals are safe. So when you get a character like that, I think sometimes you have to do that just to let the viewers know that you know, we're not messing around. You know,
this is life and death.
Exactly. These are real dangers these people face. And again, I love her. And it's funny because I didn't love her in The 100, yeah. but that was her character, not the actress. And then back when she was talking about Daisy talking to Deke about her father. And I really like the fact that she didn't go into a lot of detail about her father. And Agent Coco mentions understatement or perspective. And I think it's kind of a little of both. I think she really didn't want to lay her whole story on Deke and perhaps have it color how he sees his own father, because she does have the perspective.
That's a good point. Yeah. And I think you're totally right about that, because that was her all encompassing motivation in season one, but she's come a long way since then.
Yeah. And as you said, great feedback. All right. We heard from Skimmins, who says, if Fitz helped create the time portal, then how can he not be part of the prophecy?
You know what I think of it? That's a good beginning question, Skimmins, because I think Fitz being taken out of the equation might just be what breaks the cycle. I could be wrong about that, but the fact that Enoch was involved, I think, is and Fitz was left behind, might be one of the attempts that changes this particular loop.
Okay. She goes on and says, I can understand old Robin having trouble remembering what's present, past, future with all she's experienced, But younger Robin should have a better handle, so why did she exclude him but include May and Gemma? Another awesome slow-motion action scene with Elena. Gemma dies multiple times. Well, now we know why Daisy had a hand in destroying the world. nice. To domestic May. Seriously, show, you can't give us one answer to the overall big mission? I know May teased it at the end, but still, I'm really getting tired of this wandering around in a sense. It's a great way to connect fans with the character situation, but a frustrating thing to experience the longer it goes on. And, you know, that's a conflict that every show runs into. How long do you drag certain things out?
Right. And I think if this had been another season that had three pods, maybe that would have pleased Skimmins a little more with the storyline more compressed. But this storyline is taking a little bit longer. But I guess that's a matter of opinion, though. I kind of liked the pacing.
Yeah. It's like being in an open world game, but doing every side quest first before ever playing the first mission of the main quest.
Very good analogy.
It'll be interesting to see how they tackle Flint's involvement with time, because if he goes back and changes things, then disappears, one could argue that should mean he never was there to come back and this future happens again. Do they go branching where Flint helps the team and stays in their time because everyone else knows he's dead or safe, thus you have an alternate timeline? Another overall confusing episode due to the questions versus answers ratio, thus I can just give it an okay. The acting, as usual, was good and there were neat moments, but overall I felt like it was treading water, essentially, instead of making any progress.
Yeah, and I guess Skimmins has been pretty clear about her opinion about that. And she's probably one of those people that we were just referring to where time travel is not necessarily their bag. So it's something that maybe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans aren't as used to as you and I are, as people who have talked about time travel before in other contexts. So, you know, I disagree with you, Skimmins, but I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. I think it's gotten, I don't want to say a lot of criticism from things I've read online, but I know a lot of other reviewers, I guess they felt it wasn't focused, and I would disagree.
I would too. I mean, certainly the one criticism I would have is that I had to watch it twice to get that Fitz comment. So that's not really fair. I mean, would you agree with that at least, Dave?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I mean, I think sometimes with a show this complex, and every episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not this complex, I think sometimes you just have to. And I think that's okay. I mean, I think we would certainly say that we don't want a show to have a bunch of throwaway lines that really don't mean anything. Mm-hmm. By the same token, every line can't be this really ultra consequential line, but I think that was because it was time travel. I really liked the way they did that.
Yeah. And I think we have to reserve judgment until we see how it all ends. You know, as an episode itself, it probably just introduces things that will make more sense later.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, the thoughts are there. And I think the feedback covered the entire breadth of reaction, because I definitely thought it was one of my favorite episodes, but people already know I'm a huge fan of time travel, so I'm not sure if that's a surprise to many people. But I do like that we got both sides of the coin here. So we're very grateful to all of you who chimed in, and I can understand why we got more feedback for this particular episode than an average episode. And hopefully you've enjoyed this supersized edition, or at least for this season of The Sandbox. But that's going to be it for this week. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @S.H.I.E.L.D. _GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. GSM, which is also where you can vote on the Kolsas report.
And Mike and I'll be back next week with our discussion of episode 9 of season 5 entitled Best Laid Plans. But remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or even call 304-837-2278.
And remember to review and rate The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know, it sucks when your listeners get to say, "I told you so."